This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Heartened by their initial success, the desperate and reasonably violent men of the Permanent Assurance battled on until, as the sun sets slowly in the west, the outstanding returns on their bold business venture became apparent. Once proud financial giants lay in ruins. Their assets stripped. Their policies in tatters.
It's fun to charter an accountant and sail the wide accountancy to find, explore the funds offshore and skirt the shoals of bankruptcy. It can be manly insurance. We'll up your premiums semi-annually. It's all tax-deductible, we're very incorruptible, we're sailing on the wide accountancy.
And so they sailed off into the ledgers of history. One by one, the financial capitals of the world crumbling under the might of their business acumen. Or so it would have been, if certain modern theories concerning the shape of the world had not proved to be disastrously wrong.
It's after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. It is 503-505-6964. If you'd like to join us today, 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have on this Thursday. It's 503-505-6964. Phones on. Wait for it. There we go. All right. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's radio program. And why wouldn't you, my fine feathered friends? Why would you not? Or why would not you? I guess really, if we're gonna uncontract that word,
maybe, you know, their ears don't work and they can't listen to the radio.
No, but they can hear the vibrations and they can feel my love through the air, Don. Can't you? Here's the thing about contractions: they don't really make any sense sometimes when they're expanded. You know, why wouldn't you? Why would not you? You wouldn't say why would not you to somebody.
No, you would say why would you not?
Right. And yet when you contract it, it's, you know, it's why wouldn't you?
That's because Americans speak sloppy English.
Part of the unfolding glory of our language, our native tongue. It's not really our native tongue. It is, but it is a thing that gently unfolds, fading like a flower every time you leave, every time you go. Every time you leave, you know I tried to hide away.
Every time you leave, you take a piece of meat with you.
Every.
All right.
It's 503-505-6964. You know, it's funny, as you went one way, I went the Roxette way. The way I always go, by the way. If you want to reach us via Skype, you can do that. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our Skype username, Rick Emerson Show. You can also get us on the text box. You can also email if you like. That's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com with your observations there transmitted to us over the Intertron. Don Taylor can be reached as Don at. That is Don at rickemerson.com. Coming up today, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch. We'll also have another top five. What is today's top five, Don Taylor?
Today's top five are my top five songs about fall, about the season of autumn.
Fall the season.
Yes.
Okay. Do they have a fall in the title, or are they just sort of lyrically about fall? Or is it just implied
they are
about fall?
They are songs that take place in fall, reference autumn in some fashion.
I don't know that I can think of any. Wait, give me one second. I only got one.
There are many.
Really?
Yes.
More than I would anticipate?
Well, plus if you also keep in mind that September, October, and November are also fall. So any song that had one of those months mentioned in it also was qualified. There were literally...
Are there songs that reference November?
Yes.
All right. All I can think of is Gone Till November by Wyclef Jean, but that's probably not...
No,
probably
that, not that sadly, that did not make my list.
All right. I got nothing. Well, I'm excited. I wait with the most bated of breath to hear the top five. So we got that top five coming up later on the day. Also, another installment of the greatest songs ever made that is headed down the pipeline towards you. My friends, my companions, mi compadres, my fellow travelers on the road of amusement. Don Taylor is also tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
A sex offender is on the loose in Southern California. The BBC apologizes to Bob Geldof. And Oklahoma accidentally outlaws the Ten Commandments.
Don't! Ayo. Why are they apologizing to Bob Geldof? Give me a hint. Don't give me the whole thing. Don't give me the whole pie. Just give me just a little taste.
They said that he did something that was very, very bad that he didn't actually do.
Is this pedophilia?
No, this has more to do with the whole Live Aid thing.
Oh, okay. Let's get right to the pedophilia thing. Wasn't that the Pete Townsend deal? When a couple years ago, didn't Pete Townsend get tagged as being a pedophile?
Did he?
He was writing a book.
Oh, that's right.
He was writing his autobiography about how about his wicked Uncle Ernie used to come and fiddle about with him. And so as part of that, he was like looking up something about child porn on the internet. The next thing you know, it's like the bobbies are kicking in the door of his house. You know, yeah. All right, then on the ground. And he had to register. There was like this weird week and a half where Pete Townsend had to register as a sex offender. It's the strangest thing. All right. So that is all on the way today. Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, top five songs about autumn / fall. We've also got the greatest songs ever made and those stories headed your way momentarily. And you can get on board if you'd like. It's 503-505-6964. Also, we've got a governor, right?
Yeah.
It is because what's his name? Dudley conceded or he just threw in the towel?
Right.
And I guess, and is that a thing that like, is it... Have they actually said that he'd lost, or is it just one of those things where it was trending against him and he wanted to get out ahead of the curve?
That was pretty much it, yeah.
He wanted to be hanging on to the very bitter end, making him just count every single final vote.
No, they were saying, Multnomah County, overwhelmingly liberal. You're going to lose. And then they said, numbers are, we're starting to count the ballots and the numbers are coming in and you're going to lose. And he went, okay.
You wonder if those guys just sit there and if they just stare blankly at a wall, just drinking scotch straight out of the bottle while they're waiting for those things to be, waiting for those to be. And plus, here's the other thing. I'm not trying to pile on because I know he just got horked, but, when I have a bad day or maybe I didn't sleep very well or I'm just, I'm cranky because I had some terrible experience at the post office or whatever. It's like, I come home and I don't want to talk to anybody. I come home and Lars says, how are you? I said, I'm in a bad mood, so I'm going to need to be in my office by myself with the door closed and blinds drawn, just looking at the carpet for like 7 hours. Don't talk to me. Don't slip notes under the door. I'm just going to need complete and utter and total solitude here for a while. So I can't imagine how I would be if I actually had just lost, a gubernatorial race into which I had poured millions of my own dollars. And if I'd lost by only like 3,000 votes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because the thing is that they're always just a photograph standing next to their family and saying, well, now I'm going to get back on with my life. I mean, I would just be at home just punching holes through things and just kicking the cat down the street.
Yeah, but, that's the thing, though. It's like an hour before they were standing there with their family, doing that. They were, like, in a sleazy motel room somewhere with an intern drowning their sorrows.
Probably. Just firing a shotgun through the walls of the shower. All right. What did you do last night, Don Taylor?
I was going to go to a movie, but I didn't get home soon enough because there was a screening of the new Russell Crowe movie.
And I didn't even know the new one was a new Russell Crowe
film. It's called, 3 days from now or the last 3 days or something like that. His wife is put in prison for some reason, and she's not going to be able to handle prison life, so he's going to break her out of the joint.
Right.
And so I was going to go see that. And then
how'd that work out for you?
Well, I didn't get home. Basically, the timing was such that when I got home, I would have had to have like immediately jumped in the car and gone right back to like Lloyd Center. And I was like, I don't care about this enough. So I did two things. I made some macaroni and cheese from scratch, and I know that you are a fan of the boxed macaroni and cheese, but I make excellent macaroni and cheese. I cut up a little kielbasa sausage in it, you know, make everything from scratch. Put a little bit of mustard in the sauce, so you have kind of a sausage and mustard mac and cheese kind of a thing. Excellent. And I downloaded the book that I'm supposed to have had read by tomorrow for my Mormon book club. And I downloaded it onto Kindle on my iPhone. And I was sitting there, like, staring at my iPhone for a couple of hours, just going, swipe.
Do you
swipe,
not own the
swipe,
book?
Swipe. No.
So you don't
no.
own the book at all. It's not like you have the paper version of the book that you're eschewing for
no,
this.
No, it was one of those things where I tried to get it from the library, but it's fairly new. It only came out in July.
How much is the actual book to download, like, for your Kindle?
$9.99.
How much would the actual book have been?
$18.
Okay, so it's still in hardcover.
Right.
All right. Yeah. See, and I guess I can see that. Although I still would have. Do they not have? So is there not like a Kindle or a reader or something for like the laptop for a regular computer?
Well, no, because I think that would kind of defeat the whole purpose of them, you know, selling you a Kindle.
So defeat the purpose of reading it on a 4x2-inch screen.
Well, I think the only reason they have Kindle for the iPhone and the iPad is basically to try to convince you that the Kindle is awesome and therefore kind of convince you to buy a Kindle, which started out at like $350
right.
and are now down like to $180 or something.
Well, the Kindle's doing the same thing the iPod and the iPhone did where it came out, which is more expensive than gold. But that's just because they know the early adopters will buy it no matter how expensive it is.
Yeah. And so, you know, and Amazon, sure, they want to sell books. And if they can sell books, you know, at $10 a pop through iPhone like this, you know, that's great. But I think their ultimate goal is to get people to actually buy a damn Kindle.
I actually used a Kindle for about an hour and a half last year. One of the first ones that came out because Susan Reynolds at CBS had one. And she left it sitting at her desk. And I said, what's this? And she said, it's a Kindle. And then she did that thing where I said, what's this? And she said, and she was like in the hallway. She said, it's a Kindle. And then without even answering, she goes, yes, you can pick it up and touch it. Because it was like the iPad. Like you see, I don't even want an iPad. That's the thing. Like I have no, you know, maybe I get one someday, maybe I don't. But it's like, I don't really need one. But the first time I saw somebody with an iPad, I'm like, can I touch that? And it's like, that is the, and that's not even just an Apple thing. Because again, the Kindle's from Amazon. That, though, is the, that's the really insidious great marketing trick that a lot of those companies have pulled off. Where it's like, you see the thing and you just, I know this sounds creepy, but it's like you just want to go put your hands on it. You know, you just want to run your fingers lovingly over the side of the.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you, I was out somewhere. God, where was I? It was just a couple days ago. I might have been at Powell's or something. But it was somebody had one of those new the MacBook Air, which is just like, I mean, it's like the width of a credit card. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's like a manila folder that's a computer.
And then, of course, it's like way more powerful than the computer that I just bought, you know, like a year ago or something. It was like, I think it was like I was like in the Powell's coffee shop or whatever. And he's typing away. And it was funny because we're just sitting. It's funny. And by funny, I mean pathetic and sad that he's sitting there in the Powell's coffee shop and he's typing away and he's doing his thing or whatever. And, you know, we're all sitting there and, you know, this is whatever, 25 of us scattered throughout that little coffee shop. Shop area, and some of us have books, some of us have computers, but everybody has something that they should be doing. And again, many people there had their own laptops with them, but it's like you looked up and you just at any given moment, it was like you did feel like it was like one of those weird nature films where you just see all of the animals on the plane and the one creature has a bison that he's managed to bring down by himself, and everybody else is just sort of sitting staring at him wondering if it's worth it to rush him and take the bison, you know. And then you kind of look at each other going, well, I bet if we all charged him at the same time there'd be enough for each of us to get a bite. But we're all I can't even tell you how many times I looked up and I would see other people, and I presume they saw me staring at this guy who must have in turn known that all of us were just looking at him. And the thing is, I've got a computer that is my
so it's like the technological equivalent of being a chick with just a really great rack.
Yes, yes. That is it. You have never said anything truer than that in your life, nor shall you. You should take your life right now because you have peaked in terms of intellectual leaps. That's exactly what it must be like. Here's the thing. I almost want to go get a MacBook Air now just for like a day and just carry it around with me just to see what kind of attention I get and whether the attention becomes unwanted. Because you always hear the chicks going like, and then I go out everywhere and guys are just looking at my boobs and it's a huge drag. And guys, of course, think, well, that would be awesome. What could possibly be?
And they're coming over and they're talking to me and just saying really stupid things and I don't want to talk to them. And I know they just want to talk to me because of my boobs.
They come over and they're just talking to my iPad. It's just a huge, it's like they can't even make eye contact with me. That must be exactly what it's like. Because we were just, you know, sitting there and it's like I so desperately wanted to find some reason. And again, I have no plans to buy a new MacBook. I have no plans to buy any new computer at any time in the next couple of years. I've got this. I'm set.
You just wanted to go over and fondle the guy's boobs.
I just wanted to know what they felt like. It felt like. I just wanted. God forbid it if it had been some incredibly scorchingly hot woman with a new MacBook. I mean, my head would have just exploded. You are so right. I never put that together. Is that the first time that has just occurred to you?
Yeah.
Have you thought that before?
No, that just occurred to me while you were saying that.
You know what they should do? There should be some sort of a study where they put like a really, really hot chick in a low-cut shirt next to a guy like some dweeb with a MacBook Air. And then they put a bunch of dudes in the room and just see who they pay attention to the most. Or how about this? You put what we used to call a handsome woman, but perhaps a plain-looking woman, or a woman who's just covered up, a woman who's dressed very modestly in bulky clothing, next to the hot chick. But you give the bulky chick the MacBook Air and see like where the most male attention goes.
Well, I believe there's actually a shopping plaza of some sort here in the Portland area where the Apple store is right next door to Victoria's Secret. And this guy, one of these guys I knew, was saying something about it on Twitter or something, saying what, like, it's just a dork Disneyland.
I can't even imagine.
Just, yeah.
I wonder if that's the one downtown. I wonder if that's the Apple store or something at the, there's that Apple store downtown at Pioneer, the Pioneer Grove Square.
Might be.
Because, you know, the thing about that is there's a real nexus there, too, because there's the Apple store. I do believe there is, if not a Victoria's Secret, there's some sort of, when I was a kid, what I used to call it, lingerie. Some sort of, you know, but like a ladies' underthing store. And then there's like the Sanrio store right there. And the Sanrio store, which attracts two kinds of people. It attracts like 80% of the clientele at the Sanrio place, which is the Hello Kitty company. It's mostly women, but then just some of the weirdest guys like you've ever seen in your life. And I don't even know what other personality traits I would ascribe to them. Like I don't think it attracts like gay guys or anything it's not like it attracts some particular kind of guy that is that easily quantified into a single trait. Like it's not like it just attracts like Asian boys or gay men or whatever.
You gotta figure there's like a subset of people. There was a long period when anyone who really liked manga or anime, there was something kind of weird about them.
Right.
Which isn't really the case anymore. It's become far more mainstream. But there was a time that there was something a little bit kind of odd about young men who really liked anime. So I got to figure that young men who like Sanrio have got to be a subset of the creepy anime guys.
That's totally my thing. I can't even really quantify it into saying, well, you know, the Sanrio store attracts women. And then men who blank. Because I can't really put my finger on what makes them sort of odd. I mean, apart from the fact that they are at the Hello Kitty place. But there is a specific kind of guy, often with like a backpack that seems to be slung down way too far in the back. Like it's hanging down past their ass. I don't know what relation. Hey, can I just tell you this?
I will say, though, that there is more to Sanrio than just Hello Kitty. There's also Bots Maru.
And Choco Cat. Don't forget Choco Cat. Let's skip over the fact that I knew what Choco Cat was.
I'm a big fan of Bots Maru myself.
What is Bots Maru?
Bots Maru is an angry, like, I don't know if he's a penguin or a blackbird. He's like a blackbird. But he's a little blackbird, and he's very angry and grumpy all of the time. And he's just so adorable. But he's like sort of the anti-Hello Kitty.
Somewhere out there right now, somebody, perhaps many, somebody's saying, why is it going to be the blackbird that's angry, huh? why isn't the white character ever angry about anything? And let me ask you this about Sanrio. Choco Cat, is Choco Cat the brother of, boyfriend of, or just male friend of the regular Hello Kitty characters? Do you know?
I think just a friend.
Okay, just a friend. But is Choco Cat a boy? Is that a man? Do you know?
I think so.
I don't even know why I care about it, but suddenly to think that I've got to figure out or I won't be able to sleep tonight.
They're pretty good about putting like bows in the hair of all of the female characters. Choco Cat may be separate, sort of like Box Maru, though. I don't know. Do you ever see things that have Hello Kitty interacting with Choco Cat?
No. No, I really don't, actually. I don't even
oh,
know.
Oh, he has the most adorable little animated thing on a website where he's being followed around by little ducks. I love Choco Cat. Then actually, would you like to hear an explanation of who Choco Cat is from the Sanrio website?
Sure. We've already gone too far to turn back, so let's just go out the other side of this thing.
Although this little boy cat tends to be a little scatterbrained at times, he's always up on the latest news, thanks to his ultra-sensitive antenna whiskers. He gets his name from his chocolate-covered something. Okay. I don't know what that word is. He has Pun playing around his house, the Choco Choco house, and his friends Cookie Bow, Nuts, Jelly Bean, and somebody else.
Okay. Yeah. By the way, we've got several texts coming in about this. Let's see. What?
His birthday is May 10th.
The first text just says, and I believe this is in this is our friend Keelan who says, "You must be psychic, LOL." I believe this is in reference to my statement about somewhere out there somebody's wondering why it's got to be the black character that's angry. Let's see. "It would appear that Rick is one of those creepy Sanrio dudes. Just saying." All right. Well, I find...
There's Batsmer. He's a penguin.
Oh, he looks pissed off.
Yeah,
no, he really does.
He's very grumpy and angry, and he's a penguin.
No, he looks altogether displeased with just things in general.
Yeah.
I got two other things to say about Hello Kitty, then I swear to God I'm never going to mention it again. Then we're just going to talk more about chicks and beef jerky and and monster truck rallies and stuff. Two things. One, I'm going to form an alternate line of toys that's based on the way that Hello Kitty is described in Wikipedia. This is a phrase I latched onto for reasons that I can now no longer recall. When I was in Salt Lake City last year for Thanksgiving, it was, I don't know why this ended up being the case, but Laura and I were, there's this weird thing when we stay at Laura's house, her childhood home, her parents in Provo. It's like the guest room that they have created for Laura and I, it's like the Flintstones room, where it's like two twin beds separated by a nightstand in the middle. So we do actually have to sleep. I mean, I should take a picture of it, actually, the next time we go to visit her in-laws. It looks exactly like every sitcom bedroom from the 50s. I don't even know if they're twin beds, because twin implies sort of like two people could fit in there, right?
No, twin is smaller than single. So twin is actually the smallest.
How is a twin smaller than a single? That doesn't make any sense.
They're separate things. There's a twin bed and there's single beds.
That's like how Baja California is in Mexico. A twin bed is smaller than a single bed?
Yes.
That's just blowing my mind. All right, well, whatever. But the point is, there's these two twin beds separated by like one of these like 1950s Donna Reed's, the bedside tables or whatever. So that's where we are. But, so we have two choices, basically, which is either to... we have three choices. To either be in the separate beds, to try to cram into this to the one bed together, which is just difficult because then it's like you're elbowing the other person in the eye all night.
Yeah.
Or to spend like part of the night in one bed and then go, well, okay, I'm going over here now, and then move to the other side of the room to go to sleep. It's all very strange. But I remember that last November, for some reason, I was sitting there in the bedroom in Provo, Utah, on my laptop, and I was reading the Wikipedia entry for Hello Kitty, and I have no idea what led me to that moment of my life. But Wikipedia identified Hello Kitty. For some reason, I found this phrase hilarious as being a popular mouthless feline. It was just awesome. And I decided that I wanted to form my own line of toys just called Popular Mouthless Feline. And they would be sort of like, I don't know, they would be creepy in some way. Creepier. Here's the other thing I then came up with. You know what somebody should make? You know what would sell like gangbusters? Mm. Like hotcakes? Like a thing that sells a lot? Hello Jesus. And it's Jesus and all the 12 apostles, but they're all done Sanrio style.
And then
he could have like a little cute stigmata, you know, like
yeah.
a happy little perforation of the wrists or hands. Hello, Jesus. And the thing is, here's what's great about Hello, Jesus, Don, is that it would sell to everybody. Because it would sell to sort of Sanrio kids who happen to be Christian. It would sell to Christians who want to be a little interesting or kooky or edgy. And it would sell to hipsters. And it would sell to people who are agnostics but love Sanrio stuff, period, and feel like they got to own all of it or even the knockoff stuff. And then it would sell to people who disdain religion and Christianity and to want to find some like hipster way to mock it. You know, some snarky way to show that they're atheists or something. It would sell to everybody. I mean, you make money hand over fist with
there's
that.
There's Hello Cthulhu.
See? Like Hello Cthulhu, but not so much Cthulhu or the thing that should not be. Yeshua himself.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if somebody makes that right now, just let Rick Emerson wet his beak. You're like 5%. You can have that idea. We had to just scrap this entire thing and just have a company where we just sit around and we just think of ideas and then just slip them through a grate in the door and somebody goes and makes them and then we just take a slice of the action.
We could have just a page on our website where every time we come up with an awesome idea, we just add it to the list and then it's like actually, you know, public record. And so say, you know, anyone feel free to take one of these, but know that, you know, this has been dated.
And we just call it like the do this.
Yeah.
List, like stuff you got to do, cut us in for a piece of it.
Exactly.
Popular mouthless feline, by the way. It's the phrase of the day that pays in May. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Greatest songs ever made coming up today. Pardon me, also the top five songs about fall. Also Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, and so forth. At the news desk, it is daunting.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Looks like voters in Oklahoma ratified the law of unintended consequences. That's hilarious.
Yes.
Lawmakers in the Sooner State put a constitutional amendment banning the application of Islamic law by Oklahoma courts on the ballot for Tuesday's election. The measure was overwhelmingly approved, despite months of resistance from legal experts who argued that it blatantly violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Sharia law was never once been applied by an Oklahoma judge. The amendment's principal author argued the state needed to make a preemptive strike against the dangers of Islamic theocracy. CNN reports that Oklahoma's amendment, which also banned the use of international law in judicial decision-making, might force Oklahoma judges to ignore all laws that were conceived on foreign soil, even those near and dear to Oklahomans' hearts. I would like to see Oklahoma politicians explain if this means that the courts can no longer consider the Ten Commandments, said a University of Oklahoma law professor. Isn't that a precept of another culture and another nation? The result of this is that judges aren't going to know when and how they can look at sources of American law that were international law in origin. Many of us who understand the law are scratching our heads this morning, laughing so we don't cry.
Wait a minute. So is it say that you can't consider religious law or you can't consider international law in any way?
Consider international law in judicial.
Well, that doesn't make any sense because if you presume that a lot of the laws are based upon the rights granted to citizens, so like you got the right to own a gun but you don't have the right to shoot a guy, then you're assuming that many of the laws, I think correctly assuming that many of the laws come from the Bill of Rights and then come from the Constitution, which was itself drawn from the Magna Carta, which is foreign. So just, I mean, don't look now or anything. That's one of those things where it seems like a really, really great idea to have frogs come to Springfield to get rid of dragonflies. But then you wake up like a year later and it's like you're just living in that weird Ray Bradbury story with the butterfly.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. There you go.
Federal authorities seized 30 tons of marijuana from a smuggling operation between Tijuana and San Diego. John Morton with Immigration and Customs Enforcement says agents shut down an elaborate smuggling tunnel that stretched the length of 6 football fields under the border.
I can promise you there are some very unhappy people in the cartel.
You know, I wonder if this is like when somebody thinks they're going to be elected president and they just bring in 500,000 balloons and then it doesn't happen. And so they just got all these balloons and a truck out back and they're not quite sure what to do with it. I wonder if they were just anticipating like a huge surge in demand for marijuana if Prop 19 passed. And now they're just standing at the border going, I don't know what to do with it. You know, send it back, I guess, or give it to the crew, give it to the guys, whatever, you know.
They were just waiting for the go signal.
Yeah, waiting for I got to be like, no, any second now. We're going to need all. It's like, you know, it's like you got to order a bunch of extra champagne before New Year's, you know.
Yeah, and then just somebody like snaps their fingers.
Yeah, damn.
Damn.
Crap. Well, I guess to the dollar store we go with this. Come on.
To the bowling alley.
Where your mom
is apparently hanging out looking for her glaucoma meds.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever gone to like the dollar store, not so much here, but in a larger city where you see stuff that clearly it was either manufactured by a company and they just realized like right out of the gate that it was never, ever, ever going to sell. So it skipped even going to the regular super. Because the normal path is a company makes a product. It goes to the supermarket where maybe it doesn't sell or they discontinue it. And so then they unload it to the dollar store.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to a dollar store, though, where it's obvious that it went right from the factory to the dollar store, or sometimes where it went to restaurants or hotels, then to the dollar store, because it doesn't have the traditional packaging. It's just black and white packaging. And it's like variations of products that you've never seen for sale anywhere else.
You'll find that at grocery outlet. Have you ever gone to grocery outlet?
Is that like Smart and Final?
No.
What's that place? What's the place on the Stevens up here? It's not Smart and Final. Cash and Carry.
No, Cash and Carry is a wholesale grocer, which is awesome. I shop at Cash and Carry all the time. But no, grocery outlet, there's like a chain of them. And they're like a dollar store for food. And they're like the coolest damn places because it's a grocery store, but it's like a dollar store. And so you have like weird off brands of stuff that you've never heard of. You have flavors of like Shasta soda that don't actually sell in this market. So you've never seen them on the shelves and you're standing there going, I didn't know Shasta made pina colada soda.
Totally.
And it's like 50 cents for a six pack of it. Just weird, weird food items that you'd never see in the regular grocery store. And everything is really super, super dirt cheap because it's like a dollar store. They're trying to unload stuff that didn't sell or nobody wanted or is some kind of overstock.
They have those in San Diego. And when I lived in San Diego, I don't know if it was that chain, but it was a store similar to that. And they were on every corner. It was everywhere you went in downtown San Diego, you would just find these stores where everything, was like $1.99. And it would be like these crates of Pop-Tarts, for example, that you knew came from hotels or restaurants because they didn't have like, you know, like they were black and white labels and it just said like Pop-Tarts contains 70, you know, or whatever. Kellogg's likes, like, you knew they were the real deal, but that they didn't have to be put on a shelf to attract consumer interest. So they just had the bare bones, no frills packaging.
Yeah.
And it would be something like applesauce flavored Pop-Tarts where you look at it and you just think, that's something that didn't work out, you know, or you'd see like a weird, you know, like what it is, it's Keanu Reeves breakfast cereal, you know, and it was just like something that seemed like a great idea until they actually started manufacturing it. And then they got the results of the focus group testing back and they said, ooh, no, where can we unload this? And the answer is they unloaded it like to me via that store.
One of the best things I ever got at grocery outlet, and I don't know where you can buy them if you have to buy them directly from Jelly Belly or from something else, but they have a candy section, and they have like all of these. I don't know how they get their candy or what the, you know, what brings them to the grocery outlet, but I was there one time and they had these big bags. They were like 2-pound bags from Jelly Belly, of Jelly Belly jelly beans, and it was called Belly Flops. And it was all Jelly Belly jelly beans that were misshapen.
Oh, like sort of misfires.
Yeah, like they just weren't shaped right.
Right.
Or there were like
right.
three actually stuck together or whatever. And they tasted fine. They tasted great, but they weren't pretty. So they didn't meet the standard to go into the actual packaging. And it was really cheap for a big bag of these things.
Well, that's like there's that place in Seattle which is like it's next to the factory for the Oboy Oberto sausage company, and it's the like the Oberto outlet store or the Oberto the whatever. But you go in there and it's just like it's just like bits and end pieces
Ooh.
Of sausage, which is just awesome. Because I went through. I think this is maybe not a guy thing. It might be, though. I don't know. But it certainly is like, I think it's a boy thing because boys are the ones who buy like Slim Jims. You know, like those don't sell to. You know, women and adults don't buy Slim Jims.
Yeah.
That's like teenage. That's like 17-year-old guys and me every now and again. But when I was a kid, I was an enthusiast for the Oberto sausage. And but I would go to Seattle every now and again. And it was just like as they were making those meat sticks that they just sell like in the bin next to the cash register at Plaid Pantry or something, which, by the way, you don't ever want to buy those.
No.
Because I could say, knowing a few guys who've worked at convenience stores, the things that are sometimes done with those meat sticks.
Oh, gosh.
You, seriously.
Oh, God.
I could use a phrase right now that is not profane, but it's incredibly disturbing about what a friend of mine used to do with those meat sticks. And again, it's safe for air in the sense that there's no and it's not what you think probably. It wasn't, you know.
I can think of about four or five different things that I'm not sure I want to actually know. So.
Well,
what did he do with the beef?
Do you want to know?
I really do.
Here's the thing. No, here's the thing. I'm gonna write it down fold it up on a piece of paper. Hold on. All right, hold on.
By the way, my husband grew up in this area. He grew up mostly like in Vancouver and in Albany. And he's like quite the aficionado of the Oh Boy Oberto brand. He's like, "Do you ever have that?" And I'm like, "No, I don't think we had that brand in Southern California." I think he's like, "Best beef jerky ever."
Seriously, he's not lying. And I got to tell you, growing up in Kennewick, here's the other thing. The other reason I was an aficionado of those is that in my hometown of Kennewick, the big event they have every year is these hydroplanes, which are these huge, these amazing speedboats. And there's this speedboat race that happens. It's one of those things that like seems really big when you grow up in Kennewick and you go everywhere else and you realize nobody else, like it doesn't mean dick to the rest of the world. But it's the single biggest event that happens every year, and the size of the town doubles to 40,000. but it's like anything else where there's companies that sponsor a boat. So there's a Budweiser boat and there's a a Coca-Cola boat or whatever. And one of them was an Oberto, you know, whatever. And so it was like had a big top of mind awareness, as marketers say, when I was growing up. But yeah, you go to this factory and it's like as they're making those beef sticks, you know, because they have the perfectly like chopped off and flattened ends, and they just take all those ends and the ends just get swept off into a bag, which they go and they just vacuum seal it. And then it's like $9 for like 15 pounds of end pieces. Here's the other great thing about that store in Seattle, which I'm almost certain is still there. I swear to Christ, it is right next to a place called the Casketeria, where they just sell, it's like an outlet store for caskets.
Oh, wow.
I swear to you, it's true, the Casketeria. And I can't remember.
There aren't a lot of times, though, that you would want to knock both of those out in one shopping trip.
Well, and my whole thing is, like, who shops at the Casketeria? Is that like, are you planning ahead, or is it like dad died real suddenly and it's sort of an impulse purchase? Like, you got to get it done today. You don't have a lot of time to bargain hunt. Or is it a place that like you take your parents as sort of like a passive threat, you know, to make sure that they better put you into the will, because otherwise it's like a $5 cardboard box for you.
I applaud anyone, though, who shops at the Casketeria, because I got to say, when my mom died, I had to like have her cremated, and I got the phone book open and started making calls and found out that, man, funeral services are a racket.
Oh, yeah.
My Lord.
Oh, no, that's where the money is.
The vast swath of difference in prices that I was quoted. And finally, I just went with the least expensive one, and I realized people are grief-stricken, and they're not going to bother to bargain shop.
You got to pay for that in advance.
They're not going to compare prices, and so they just like, my dad died, I gotta bury him, and they just get hosed.
Well, it's not only that, it's like my dad died and I was not attentive to him in his final years. I guess I'll make up for it now by paying $15,000 for a thing I will use once.
And then it will go in a hole in the ground.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think about the stones of the funeral industry, that would be like you paying $15,000 for a car you got to drive once, and then we just set it on fire and kicked it into the ocean. I mean, that's basically what's happening. So I have written down on a piece of paper, what a friend of mine used to do with those beef sticks behind the counter. I'm just going to set it here. I'm going to let you ponder it for a bit, and then if, like, in five minutes, you still want me to say it out loud. But then everybody will have noticed too that it's coming, so it's not going to catch you off guard.
All right.
Something else I was going to say. Wait, no. Why were we talking about sausage just now?
Because we were talking about the discount off-brand grocery store
products, where it's like the bits and the whatever. So you know what I'm going to bring in tomorrow? Because my wife has returned from her trip through great sections of this fine world of ours. So she was in Turkey, I think she skipped Morocco. She was in Turkey, Italy, Spain, and then I think just all around Spain. She went from like whatever Madrid to Barcelona to whatever and blah 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 blah. But here's why she's the best wife ever. A, she brought back, and I don't know when I'm going to bring this in. She brought back. It was too late for this Halloween, but she found the best Halloween mask that I have ever seen in my life. And she said it called to her like the song of a siren. She said that she saw it on a shelf like in the back of like some junk store in Barcelona. And she said the whole thing, it was like it was suddenly just lit. It was just like, it was like Indy in the map room, you know, in Tanis or something, you know, it's just with the staff of Ra where the sunlight comes down and it was illuminated, and she brought it home for me. I might bring it in tomorrow, but I might wait and just wear it when you're not expecting it. I don't even know that I can wait till next Halloween. That's just a tease for tomorrow. It's like the most incredible Halloween mask that I've ever seen in my life. And a thing that I don't think you can buy in America. So you just think on that. But the other thing that I will bring in tomorrow, she brought us a variety of junk foods and snack items from Spain, Turkey, and other countries, including, I swear to Christ, potato chips that just taste like ham.
That's awesome.
Not bacon, just like ham. And they're called, like, you know, Hamel chips or whatever it is. And also a here's the other thing she brought, and these are all sitting at home, so I'm going to bring these in tomorrow for Friday's show. You know what I'm intrigued by? I am intrigued by foreign snack foods where when you look at the package, you cannot for the life of you figure out what the hell it is. You're looking at it, and it's like, you know, it's like a guy who kind of, you know, like he's round, you know, but then he's green with like, you know, purple dots on him or something, and he's holding a lasso. And then it just says, you know, bequetas, you know, or whatever, with like a tilde. And then there's like a happy child on the front of it. And the child is putting something into his mouth and smiling. And it feels kind of crunchy, but then you look at the ingredients and you're like, I have no idea what the F this is.
Yeah, the last time that happened, I bought some snack food because I every once in a while I will buy some like Mexican snack food because it's on the shelf and I like the label, but I don't know what it is.
Is this like when you go to the convenience stores that have like a largely Hispanic
yes.
clientele and there's like the lemon lime cayenne peanuts or something?
Yeah. And the last time I bought something and it was they were kind of like tiger tails. They were kind of like some kind of a Twinkie sponge cake with some kind of a thing and a stuff going on. But it came with these two little plastic implements in it that I couldn't figure out what they were. And they were pressed, and I think they were supposed to look like some kind of a character. But if you're not familiar with the brand, you probably don't know what it is. Like, is it a dog? Is it a horse? Is it a clown head? I don't know what this is. And I kept holding it in a different light. And then it had a stick. It was like on a stick. And I didn't know what it was for. And it took me about a half an hour to figure out. I think you're supposed to pierce Your Twinkie thing, I don't know, like an ear of corn, or something, and you just one end so you can eat it on a stick and not get your fingers sticky. I don't know. I couldn't figure out what the hell the thing was for.
And you don't want to ask, of course, because you're a gringo. You don't want to be like, hey, I'm lame and white. How do I use this thing here?
Like, what is this, and why is it in my snack? I don't know. And I never figured it out.
You have to bring one of those in the next time you see it, because we'll have somebody sort of explain it to us. That's fascinating. See, now I'm trying to picture it, and I'm not even really sure what it is. It's like you're like John Spartan with the shells, just going like, I don't know how these all work together. So tomorrow I'll bring in the potato chips that taste like ham. Also a bag of indeterminate origin snack foods. Like, I have no idea what they are, if they're sweet, if they're savory, if they're salty, I got nothing. And then she did the other thing, which she brought a variation on American products, but with they have different flavors, you know, where it's like a Snickers bar, but it's from Turkey, so it tastes like, I don't know, dirt or goat or something.
Pizza.
Yeah. So I got a whole bag of that stuff that I'm going to bring in tomorrow. So we'll be consuming it throughout tomorrow's show. Let's take a break. Let's do one more. Then we'll take a break. Then on the other side of the break, we'll do Greatest Songs Ever Made. We'll talk about one of our fine business partners, and we will return to a life of religious fulfillment. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Spanish prostitutes have been ordered to wear reflective safety vests for their own safety, according to reports. This story, by the way, comes to us from alert listener Melissa.
Excellent.
Who
Thank
forwarded
you.
This to me. Women working on rural roadsides in Catalonia must don the vests to avoid a $56 fine. Prostitution is not banned in Spain, but it has been outlawed in some cities. However, lack of the safety vests is the only reason to fine women working outside of the Spanish city of Lleida, where the vest program is now in effect, as prostitution is not illegal outside the city limits. Some see the move as an attempt by Mayor Josep Maria Bea of Lleida to drive the women out of town. There are an estimated 300,000 female sex workers in Spain, according to the Telegraph newspaper. Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero promised to ban prostitution ads in newspapers, but has failed to do so. Meanwhile, a recent survey showed that 1 in 4 Spanish men admitted to paying for sex.
So this is 1 in 4 Spanish men are admitted for paying for sex, and they're talking about banning the ads in the newspapers.
Right.
Which just seems like, I mean, that's one of those things where it seems like a product you don't really need to advertise. Sort of like Preparation H. It kind of sells itself. You know what I mean? Like, there's not really, advertising is typically there to create a desire for a product that you might not otherwise purchase. But it seems like this is just sort of one of those water seeking its own level kind of things.
I do like the idea, though, that the prostitution itself is not illegal. So what they're going to do is, like, tell these prostitutes that they'll be fined if they don't wear reflective safety vests, and that it's for their own good because they're working the roadside.
Well, see, that's what I figured it was, is because otherwise you're just driving along and boom, boom. What was that? Sound like a hooker to you? Ah, crap. And you
Not
have to get
another
out.
One.
Seriously, my grill's already full of hookers from last week.
And honestly, if there's 300,000 of them in Spain, which is not that,
it's a problem.
Big of a country, then, yeah, they're probably getting mowed down in traffic right and left.
Yes, but then you unlock a whole new achievement level for that.
They're like herds of sheep in Scotland. You have to stop your car and lean on the horn and wait for them to pass.
Yes. Prostitutes in Spain are just like sheep in Scotland. You know what we mean. Bam. All right. Still to come, Clown Watch, Cheney Watch, and Top 5. Top 5 songs. That is the Top 5 songs about fall. Top 5 songs about fall. And that is on the way right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Hey, by the way, so, you know, we keep talking about having Clara Greppel from Castalia Language Center join us at some point in the studio. So, do you think
she could explain the snack food thing to
I'm
me?
I'm saying, do you think she could rustle up some of the tiger tail things?
Maybe.
Or like, you could bring him in and just have her, like, have her explain...
Maybe she could.
Have her. Here's, can I just tell you this? One of the greatest things that in a lot of Spanish-speaking countries they sell, there's this snack food company called Bimbo. Or Bimbo.
Oh, I'm familiar with Bimbo.
And one of their biggest selling products is called the Lara, the L A R A, and it's like a bar or something, or I don't know if a Lara is a particular. I don't know if a Lara is like a zinger or something, it's a slang term for it, or if it's actually like a sub brand like Twinkie, you know. So if it's like Hostess is to Bimbo, and then Lara, or you know, Twinkie is to Lara. But anyway, so I never get tired of just whenever we're in a place that sells food like that, of just buying things that say Bimbo Lara on the front, and then just leaving them scattered around the house. In any event, but I'm fascinated by stuff like that. Also, I have a question for you. Right. Now you know about things. Marzipan, is that the stuff that tastes like peanut butter?
Marzipan is almond paste.
Okay, but it is a nut kind of nut based product.
It's made from ground almonds.
I am the biggest fan of that stuff. I find that to be that's an exceptionally tasty food. You can't really find it in a lot of stuff. There's just like a marzipan aisle or something at the store.
Actually, if you go to the baking aisle, you might be able to find there is often marzipan paste just sold in these tubes or these chunks in the baking aisle.
Here's why I can't do that, though, because then I'm going to be at home eating something out of a tube.
Yeah.
And if you ever find yourself, friends, here's a little tip for me to you. If you ever find yourself sitting around the house, especially alone or in your underpants, and you're eating something out of a tube, your life has gone wrong.
Oh, my God. My husband, we stopped at a convenience store on the way home so I could get, like, a bag of ice the other day. And he came back to the car. He ran into the house, into the 7-Eleven, came back, had a bag of ice in one hand, and in the other hand, he had one of those, like, 2-foot-long, 7-ounce, like freezer, like, blue freezer pop
things. Oh, like an Otter Pop?
Yeah.
But the massive, the kind that's like a baseball bat?
Yeah. And he just sat there for the next half hour in the living room, sucking on this thing and slurping, and I wanted to kill him.
Here's a truism about convenience store food.
He was so happy, too. Like, look what I got! It was just ridiculous.
Do you ever just think to yourself, no offense, Patrick, do you ever just think to yourself, I've married a child?
Oh.
Or a gerbil.
Yeah, often.
She's just sitting there with like that water bottle thing with the ball bearing at the end of it. Just
pretty much.
Yes. John, do you want some of this? No, I'm all good over here being a grown-up, thanks. And then, of course, his mouth is blue. You know, or whatever it is, you know, for the rest of the day, he's got like a weird stain all around his lips.
Yeah, it was one of those things where he look what I got, and I was like, really? He goes, oh, I love these.
Like he's a basset hound bringing you a dead woodchuck.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
he makes me feel so joyless sometimes.
Ah, l'amour. Well, in any event, I have no idea how I'm going to tie this into Castalia Language Center now, but it doesn't really matter. The point is that they help make these observations possible. They are one of the proud business partners. We are esteemed to have their acquaintance here at the Emerson News Network. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And I told this story last hour, I guess, during Legion of News. And I should point out that, you know, it's not like this is a thing that happened to her all the time when she was traveling or that does happen to her all the time. But, you know, when Lara was in Barcelona, she was going down some road and there's a toll road and she goes up and it's like €3 or whatever, which they're already like effing you because that's like $6, you know, American or something. So you're already just like having to grab your ankles every time you go through that place. But it's like €3 and she gives the woman a €20 note and the woman goes, OK, and, here, in Spanish, you know, here's your 10. Diez, I guess.
Yes.
And of course, Lara said she was in that moment where, you know, and she knows it's not like she just, you know, can only hem and haw her way through Spanish. She doesn't speak it conversationally, but she's not like, you know, she's not illiterate in Spanish. It's not like she's not like she can't speak it at all. But in that moment where she realizes that you need to be able to speak it conversationally to explain to the woman, A, I know what you just did there. B, you owe me $7. C, like, don't give me any guff. I'm going to sit here until you give me my $7. And the woman did the whole thing of like, I don't know what you... No sé. I don't know... No habla. I don't know what you're talking about. And the woman, of course, whether or not she actually spoke English, sort of pulled the I don't speak English card. And Lara didn't speak Spanish well enough to kind of really get in the woman's face about it. And then the guy starts laying on the horn behind her, and she realizes that the communication barrier is not total, but is wide enough that there's just no way she's going to get... So she has to eat the $7, which means that it effectively costs her... Let's see, so it cost her $20, basically American, to get through this toll road. Oh, because she wasn't able to say, like, I saw what you did. You know that I saw you. You got to give it back, or seriously, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to cause a scene, and don't think I won't do it.
And I tell you though, when you're in the Latin American countries, don't let yourself feel pressured by people honking.
No,
people honk all the time.
No, because the streets are all like. I mean, it's basically like you're just driving down Main Street in Disneyland, where everything is one-third normal size. I mean, it's like or going down any alleyway in Manhattan, where you wonder if your shoulders are actually going to catch, and they're just going to find you halfway through, like Phoebe Cates' dad, you know, in the chimney. The point is, if you go to Castalia Language Center, you're going to learn to speak it colloquially and conversationally, which means, you know, and I use the phrase colloquially, but what that really means is you can use it in real life situations. Because it's not like you're going to go, hey, honey, let's travel to another country so I can read an alphabet chart on the wall. You know, I mean, you go there because you want to do all the same stuff you do here, but in a different culture. You want to go out. You want to go to restaurants. You want to go sightsee. You want to travel. You want to go out on the ocean. But you want to be able to communicate while you're there. Because, and I can say this because she doesn't listen, because you don't want to be like Lara's traveling companion, Michelle, who just says things in English louder and louder with a really, really, really happy, bright-sounding but not actually bright tone of voice. You don't want to be that, you know? And to her credit, Lara isn't that. She just doesn't really know it as well as she wants to. So we are actually going to begin taking Spanish language classes at Castalia Language Center. Find out more about them by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is Portland Spanish. .com, Castalia Language Center. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program here on the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. It's all relative, as they say. Everything exists or is viewed in comparison to everything else. Music, culture, morality, our own self-worth or image. Through the looking glass of contrast, strengths, weaknesses, advantages, and peril can all be magnified. Nowhere is that more true than in matters of the heart, where attitudes and beliefs can easily be upended, where your own thoughts can turn against you, pinning you or trapping you. Today's song is a haunting example of such a situation. Penned in 1973, it was the second number one solo release for its songwriter and performer, and stemmed from a real-life crisis. The fear that her husband had fallen under the spell of another woman. This is fascinating for several reasons, not least of which is that the songwriter is and was viewed as, by some standards, the very embodiment of female beauty and sexuality. Talented, attractive, brash, and for a time, crippled by the fear of losing the only man she had ever loved. The interloper? A teller at the couple's local bank. A red-haired woman had, in the singer's estimation, been giving her husband exactly the wrong kind of interest at the bank, causing no end of grief and fear, which found their way into song, the lyrics telling the story of a woman who was terrified at the prospect of losing her spouse. Another reason this particular composition remains so haunting is the unique lyrical inversion it contains. Rather than the expected anger or outrage or indignation that's the hallmark of most infidelity-based or perceived infidelity-based songs, the singer, both in real life and through the words of her song's protagonist, expresses her belief that her husband is the only thing that makes her life worthwhile, that she essentially does not exist without him. In fact, it's clear from the lyrics that the woman believes herself to be unworthy of having the husband in the first place, that it's only happenstance which brought him to her, and were he to leave her, she would never be so lucky again. She expresses no anger toward the husband in the song, or to the presumed other woman, only a simple, sweet, endearing, and pathetic kind of pleading, telling her rival, "You don't know what he means to me," showing herself, this woman, the singer, the songwriter, the protagonist of the song, and as close to a living doll as the music industry has ever produced, to be utterly and totally without belief in her own value. For that reason, the song is haunting. The song is beautiful. The song is unlike anything else in the country music genre. It is one of the greatest songs ever made. This is Dolly Parton and Jolene on the Emerson News Network.
Of auburn hair with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring. Your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. Understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you. Choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you and whatever you decide to do, Jolene.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. So to come, we have your top five songs about fall. That is on the way at the news desk. This is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do that clown walk.
Let's, shall we? By the way, in case you didn't see this, I put this up on Facebook the other day and on the website and the Twitter and then blah, 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 blah. There needs to be some catch-all term created for, like, when you've just posted it everywhere. You know, because I always find myself saying that, well, I put this on Facebook and then I also put it on whatever, which I guess is pointless. I mean, in any event, because if I'm going to tell you that I posted the thing, then I'm telling you I posted the thing. So it doesn't really matter whether you saw it or not. Never mind. I just figured out that whole thing in my head. I went from A to Z right there with no help from anybody else. But by popular demand, and really it was like an unbelievably, overwhelmingly, almost disturbingly popular demand, I have posted in the archives for the Rick Emerson Show the Clown Watch theme. So that's like confidential to every one of the creepy people in the audience that was wanting to have the Clown Watch theme so that they could, like in the case of one man, make it his wife's startup noise on her Windows machine because it terrifies her. So, you know, there you go. You go to the RickEmerson.com page, you go to the archive section, and at the top there's a little link that says watches. So the Clown Watch theme is now downloadable from the Rick Emerson Show archives because Rick Emerson cares. Any doubt about that. Here's your Clown Watch for Thursday right here on the radio program.
So you're saying I could download this and turn this into a ringtone?
Yes, you could. In fact, I got to tell you, like, I posted that on Facebook. I said, hey, by popular demand, Clown Watch theme now downloadable in the archives. And I swear to God, it was like 30 seconds later, the very first post was somebody like, I just made it the ringtone of my Android phone. That's awesome. And it makes you wonder, like, you know, I don't know where you work, friend, but I mean...
Well, and also, is that like your default ringtone, or is there a specific person in your life that you're assigning this to? Anyway.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your Clown Watch.
The New York Daily News reports that Emmy-winning reporter Arthur Chien suffered extensive facial fractures after being dragged off a Greenwich Village Halloween parade float by a marauding clown. He was trying to scale the float and he grabbed my arm, said the veteran newsman, whose face was shattered in six places as he was pulled off the float.
I demand to know if there is video of this story. There must be video. I have to see video.
Sadly, no.
Ah!
No. And believe me, he works for a New York television station, and they themselves are quite abashed and unhappy that their cameras did not catch the clown.
Clown was climbing onto the float?
Climbed up onto the float. Chien told the Daily News, I tried to wave him off, but the railing gave way. We both fell, and I landed face first in the street. Chien is expected to have reconstructive surgery today.
Does it say what the nature of the clown's unhappiness was?
No.
Does the clown reach for any kind of clarification on the story?
No, because apparently when he saw the semi-conscious newsman laid out on the in the middle of the street after he pulled him down off the float, he took off.
He just ran presumably declowned at some point.
Yeah.
And they were so the neighbors. So the clown is still out. So the clown is
at large.
He's at large. He's one. He's on the loose. He's laminate.
This was the 38th annual Halloween parade for the first time Sunday as part of the TV show's, the TV news station's Shocktober promotion.
Well, I mean, truth in advertising.
And yes, sadly, the WPIX cameras did not catch the clown.
There's got to be cell phone footage of this, though. I mean, if you just, Christ, there's cell phone footage of just like guys picking out their navel lint. You know, if you were, you got to figure half the people there have a cell phone with a camera. Half of them are probably filming the stupid floats going by anyway. Half of them probably noticed that the clown thing was happening, and half of them probably hit the president by the turn, but that's still got to be 50 cameras.
Yeah, there's got to be somebody out there with some footage of the clown doing this.
I mean, I don't have clown fear or anything like it. Clowns don't bother me. You know, I don't pay them. No, never mind. So it doesn't really matter. But imagine, like, let's say you, Dawn Taylor, you're just at a parade and you're watching it and you're thinking, hey, this is exciting. It's like watching traffic go by, but slower. You're having a great time, perhaps, there with your family and your friends, your loved ones, drinking a steaming cup of hot chocolate with the marshmallows, not the big ones, but the little kind, floating on top. And then you just looked over and you just saw a clown. The creepiest part of the story is the clown climbing onto the float, which makes you think that he's some sort of feral zombie clown.
Yeah.
Clawing, like grabbing, sort of like, rah,
and grabbing
feet.
The guy, and then they both go plummeting to the ground. Speaking of the whole clown thing, though, by the way, you know, there are certain, I'm afraid of clowns, but there's also certain things that are a little bit creepy sometimes because they're associated with clowns and circuses and such. Like if you watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space,
right.
And you got the clowns making the balloon animals and
right.
The popcorn guns and things like that. I totally forgot to tell you this. I was leaving my house this morning. I opened the front door and there's an envelope dangling in front of the door. And I go, what is this? And a helium balloon, like, just comes flying at me into my apartment with an envelope attached to it. My freaking apartment complex, I think basically because they wanted to make it more fun than when they just stick an envelope on your door to say, oh, your utility bill's still due or something.
Uh-huh.
They took this the newsletter, which I took out of the envelope, and it's the damn apartment complex newsletter.
Here's what's going on for the month of November.
And they stuck it in an envelope and then used a hole punch to cut a hole out of the envelope and tied it by a ribbon to a freaking helium balloon and then stuck it, like, in front of the door. So when I opened the door,
that is
a balloon came flying at me.
No, that is creepy. That is totally uncalled for.
And it terrified me.
Yes.
And, of course, then, you know, yeah. Because then you think, is there some kind of a demonic clown somewhere nearby? Is this a warning?
We all float.
Ah, God.
Here's the thing. That would actually weird me out, too. In my mind's eye, it's even creepier because it's not tied to the doorknob. It's just suspended there.
It was.
It's just free of any sort of mooring, just sort of hovering in front of your door like a shmoo.
It was. They stuck the balloon, I think, so that it was like the top of it was like in the door jam. So that when I opened the door, it was just dangling there. It wasn't tied to the doorknob.
It freaked
me out.
I understand why you didn't do so, but it's too bad, again, that you didn't have the presence of mind to take, like, a photograph of that with your iPhone or just, you know, like, a photo of this. Imagine.
Well, and I was also on my way to work, so now the balloon is just there in the house.
Waiting for you.
And when my husband comes home, because he's going to get home before I am, he's going to walk in the front door. I decided not to even tell him.
No, here's the thing about it.
I'm just
going
to let him wonder why there's a helium balloon floating around up by the ceiling.
You're never going to get a chance to have that conversation because you're going to go home and he's just going to be dangling from the end of the balloon with, like, his face all red and just, you know, swollen. And, you know, and then you'll try to tell people about it and they won't believe you. And the next thing you know, it's like it's just going to be
the clouds. I tell you, the clouds.
And it immediately just cuts to the scene of the realtor going, and there was a couple that used to live here, but the less said about that, the better. But we've got two bathrooms, one upstairs, one downstairs. Back to this thing of the clown attacking the guy at the parade.
Yeah.
So imagine there you are. You're just standing by the side of the road and you're watching the parade and you're like, hey, there's a local weatherman. Oh, my God, he's being attacked by a clown. That would just make your brain snap. I mean, if you already had some sort of clown phobia and you looked over and you saw a clown climbing onto the float to try to and then breaking the guy's face in six places when they fell, I think that it's not like outside of the realm of possibility that would just push you into some sort of catatonia. I mean, I think your mind might just break like a dry twig right there. And then he falls onto the pavement, tangled in the clown, because then I just picture it's like when Ripley and the mother alien fall into the bottom of the airlock and there's like just tails and flippers going everywhere.
And he lands on his face while still being held onto by a clown.
It's too bad that the clown didn't, as a parting gesture, just sort of give him like a, you know, give him sort of a, you know what they ought to have, evil clowns? Evil clowns ought to be equipped with some sort of silly string cum taser, you know, sort of a, so they, you know, they, the silly string and then it zzz.
They would do that,
I'm just saying, if there's ever a Killer Clowns from Outer Space sequel.
By the way, Arthur Chien was fired from, just coincidentally, well, not coincidentally, it has nothing to do with clowns, but interestingly, he was fired in 2005 from a CBS affiliate because he was doing some kind of a live report and an Opie and Anthony fan used an obscene gesture at him. And not realizing he was on the air, Arthur Chien yelled, "What the F's your problem, man?" And then CBS fired him.
Fantastic. There you go. There's your clown watch for Thursday. Awesome. That really is, that's quite something, that story. That's, you know, and the, you know, and it's just, again, it's the idea that there's a railing around the float and he's standing there and he just feels sort of a, you know, something sort of clutching or catching on his shoe. And he thinks, I've gotten my shoe caught in part of the, you know, part of the metalwork down here. I've got it caught in a rope. And then you look down and there's just a clown holding on to your ankle and trying to pull itself up onto the float. I got to tell you this right now. Here's my deepest hope, and I apologize to you in advance for this stunt. I really am offering two apologies. One, for putting this image in your head, and two, for if this ever actually comes to pass. I really, more than words can almost express, hope that Darabont finds a way to have a zombie clown in that Walking Dead show. If at some point he can have somebody with like a little bit of face paint just kind of going, just coming down the street, how great would that be?
Did you see the fan-made trailer for the horror movie Clown?
No.
Oh, I'll try and find that for you. Yeah, it's they were saying that it was like going to be a new like Michael Bay movie or no, Eli Roth. It was actually being shopped around as they were saying like the next film from Eli Roth.
Right.
And it really looks like it could be like a really freaky, terrifying horror film. It is a very, very slickly made fan video that for a movie that doesn't actually exist, but it's a horror movie about an evil serial killer clown.
Really?
And it's really creepy.
I wonder if this is the new thing now, where everybody is just going to start making trailers, wondering if, you know, like it'll get picked up and turned into a full, you know, movie. Like they'll give it the machete treatment or the hobo with a shotgun treatment, which, by the way, is a trailer I've watched like 70 times so far. That's fantastic. You know, many years ago, a friend and I were working on this thing. We wanted to create something called Stitches the Clown. And Stitches the Clown, it would be like a clown who wore some sort of a mask made from his victims. But we never really got past the initial premise, because then we got distracted by the writing a treatment for that for our presumed trauma film, The Diary of Anne Frankenstein. And that sort of took over from the Stitches the Clown idea. But I think there's something to be done there. Could I find this video online, this trailer?
You could indeed.
Awesome. Believe it or not, I actually do have a way to tie in your clown fear with CJ's High Climbing, and it's this.
Hmm.
It's by the notion of the guy being on the float, and then he's, the float is going down the street, and then he feels something tugging at his pant leg, or, you know, fingers closing inside his sock, and he looks down, and there's the red-gloved, white-painted face of evil clawing up at him. When my dad was, I don't know, well, he would have been older than me anyway, but my dad was, you know, old enough to know better, certainly. I was a kid, and my dad was doing that thing. I don't even think it was to, like, get leaves off the roof. I think it was, I don't know, maybe but the thing back when we had that jazz with the antenna that was like on the roof of your house.
Oh, yeah.
That just seemed like it was that antenna on the roof of your house, it just seemed like a thing that was meant to cull the herd. Period. Like in every way, that antenna was a bad idea. That was for the TV signal, right? Was that like to get UHF signals or something?
That was the antenna. That was how you got the channels to your TV at all.
But that was like just, but that was just like to get when we only had the three channels still, right?
Well, we had 13 channels on my TV when I was a kid.
But I'm saying
I lived in the big city, Rick Emerson.
But you know, when you were a child, you'd have that thing where you put the one dial on U and then the other, whatever. And so, but there was a TV antenna. And so, my dad was like trying to, it was that thing you see like in every sitcom or whatever, where the guy's trying to, does it work now? And he's trying to adjust the antenna back and forth. But he's doing that thing of climbing the ladder up to get on the roof. And I don't know why ladders have this. There's presumably some reason. But it's the thing where there's the extendable ladder. And it's like a double thickness ladder, because part of it extends up, but then there's like a rope that's attached to it. And some of my dad climbing up, and he was probably half in the bag, which, you know, might have contributed to this. But he's climbing the extendable ladder, and I'm just doing whatever. I'm like in the front yard, you know, amusing myself. And I just hear the sort of, God damn it. I look over, and he'd somehow contrived to get the rope that's attached to the ladder looped around his ankle.
That's how that guy got killed in the wood chipper.
Is that how that happened?
Remember, he was putting stuff in the wood chipper, and the rope wrapped around him, and it pulled him into the wood chipper?
See, and that's the thing. And so I look over, and he's got somehow the rope on the ladder looped around his ankle, not on like one of our headphone cables that just seems to have a mind of its own. And then it's like, but of course, the more he pulls on it, it's like the more snugly it wraps around his ankle. And I, of course, am not helping. I'm just sitting there watching and probably, you know, probably feeling a little bit of, you know, a little bit of inner conflict about how I want everything to resolve itself. And then his solution, which I guess eventually worked because he didn't die, not that day, the way that he finally gets it loose is he's actually doing this, freaks me out even to think about this, he's doing the thing where he's just sort of like grabbing the ladder with both hands and kind of hopping, you know, kind of going, boom, boom. Just hopping on the ladder, trying to get enough slack in the rope that he's able to, like, get his... And I just saw it going so... There was, like... And it did end relatively well, but there was, like, no way it should have. Because you figure either the ladder falls over, the rope gets caught more, or the rope stays affixed to your ankle, and then the top extended part of the ladder just goes... And just falls down, and then just mashes you into dad paste. None of these things happened. That's like a there, but for the grace of my bad luck sort of a thing. You don't want to run that risk, though, is my point. It's 503-228-9278. That's how you get a hold of CJ's High Climbing. You can also find them at cjshighclimbing.com, cjshighclimbing.com, or 503-228-9278. Now, here's the thing. They've been in existence for more than 30 years. So for more than 30, for three decades plus, my friend, they've been saving you from yourself, or possibly some other member of your family from themselves. For home maintenance jobs that are dangerous or messy or unpleasant, like, you know, we mentioned the gutter cleaning or the roof cleaning, but it's also, it's like you get the moss or the algae that just does not want to come off, where it's like fettuccine that's been baked onto a plate. It just sits there and it just can't be removed. So if you just dread the whole idea of climbing up a ladder, or sending up some member of your family who has only a passing relationship with responsibility, you know, or if you don't want to deal with the pressure washing, especially the pressure washing that might follow some sort of a mishap that said relative has with the ladder. You contact CJ's High Climbing. They'll take care of that for you. It's 503-228-9278. And don't forget that the guys who work for CJ's, whether that's Gary, Sean, Lauren, Bode, they are covered by liability insurance. They got workman's comp. They are actually employees, so you can be assured that everything is on the up and up, you know, in terms of the legality. It's done by people who really know what they're doing and who are covered appropriately.
They will not be wrapping ropes around their ankles and dangling and crashing into things.
Probably not, but I mean, let's be honest. If they do, you know, that's a TP, not a YP.
They're covered.
That's what I'm saying. So that is CJ'sHighClimbing.com. CJ'sHighClimbing.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
BBC bosses have apologized to Bob Geldof over a televised report suggesting that money raised by the Rockers' 1985 Live Aid concerts was spent on weapons for Ethiopia's rebel army. The former Boomtown Rat star was horrified to discover a BBC program broadcast in the UK in March reported that $240 million raised by the gigs and the Band Aid record was divided up by rebel army leader Meles Zenawi, who is now Ethiopia's prime minister and used to arm militants in the country. He furiously denied the claims and filed an official complaint, and after a lengthy probe, BBC bosses ruled that they had no evidence to back up the report, and the show should never have been broadcast.
So this is the Live Aid and the Do They Know It's Christmas and the whatever, and they're claiming that it just went to buy like handguns and grenades or something.
Right.
Which is sort of great. I mean, if that had been true, I mean, there's sort of a perverse brilliance there, I suppose.
A statement from the network spokesperson says, the BBC accepts that we should have been more explicit in making it clear that the allegations did not relate specifically to Band Aid.
As such,
we are looking at lessons that can be learnt.
Per se.
Geldof adds, since their inception over 26 years ago, Band Aid and Live Aid have been subject to meticulous governance, auditing, and independent reviews. The BBC's misleading and unfair coverage had the potential to be extremely damaging to public faith, not only in Band Aid, but also other charitable campaigns and people's willingness to donate their cash to disaster funds.
Hey, did Band Aid ever do more than just the one song? I mean, they had the Do They Know It's Christmas, but is it like the We Are the World thing where there was, you know, because there was like a whole We Are the World album. I couldn't for the life of me tell you another song that's on it, though.
I don't know. I just know that ever since Almost Famous, I can't hear the name Band Aid.
View it quite the same way.
Yeah, it just doesn't work for me in the same fashion.
I'm just wondering if that's because that song gets covered every now and again. Like, I think just a couple years ago, there was like some, you know, like the new wave of British pop guys, you know, like the Robbie Williams guys. They all covered it. But I mean, you know, God love him. You know, isn't he like an Order of the British Empire or something? Didn't they knight him?
Yeah, he's
like Sir Bob or whatever.
Sir Bob Geldof.
I mean, you know, so he's making a difference in a whatever. But he, you know, here's the thing: he does have to answer for. It's just every terrible, you know, like fundraising or awareness raising record that has ever been created post Band Aid is like you can just lay the blame for that directly at that guy's feet.
Well, actually, wasn't the concert for Bangladesh?
Oh, the Harrison thing.
So that is what we have to blame.
I guess. Although maybe it's just the suffix "aid" being put after that, because then there was like I think it was Ronnie James Dio and a bunch of like metal dudes did the Hearing Aid, which was, and I'm unclear about whether, here's the thing about Hearing Aid. Have you ever, you know the song, the Hearing Aid song?
No.
It's called "We're All Stars." And it's they may have a Z at the end, but maybe not. Maybe I'm just putting that on in my head. But it's this song called "We're All Star." I believe it's parenthetical. "We're All Stars," and it's Ronnie James Dio and like the guys from Quiet Riot and like Yngwie Malmsteen and just a bunch of like big poodle-headed metal guys in tight pants singing just what is, I think, a pretty terrible song if I remember it correctly. But I can't for the life of me remember what the hell it's even benefiting. And it seems really, like, lame to think that it was just for, like, hearing loss or something. That doesn't seem like a very, I mean, it seems appropriate, but not very metal. So I honestly don't even really remember.
Well, actually, it's very metal. I mean, they do lose their hearing, the musicians, and then people who, I mean, I get.
What I'm saying, it's appropriate,
but
it doesn't seem very manly. It seems like they ought to be, you know, I don't know, it seems like they ought to be raising money for, like, you know, for, like, I don't know.
Heroin addiction?
Well, or just heroin. I mean, or just, you know, I was like...
Penis enlargement?
Or, see, now you're going totally the opposite way. I was going to say that, like, raising money to, like, buy suits of armor, you know, and swords and steeds upon which someone may gallop across a hillside to battle for freedom against an unjust king.
So symbolic penis enlargement.
Yes. There ought to be, oh my God, there ought to be, and I don't even know how we do this, is I only have the vaguest rudiments of an idea here, but there should be some sort of benefit single put together for Christmas that somehow ties into World of Warcraft. Where it's like World of Warcraft characters singing, or you're raising money to buy something for Azeroth.
Maybe we could do that.
All right, I got to figure, it's like, there's like Stormwind needs like new, I don't know, like it needs like new insulation put in the ceiling or something, because it's because the heating bill is just, it's a pain in the ass, so we're going to raise money for it. Maybe not
there's,
that exactly. No. There's something there. Somebody should totally do a benefit single whose sole purpose is to raise money for something that is an in-game World of Warcraft need. Only because that's retarded. And like, who would ever do that? And so, therefore, that's the sort of thing that, you know, get talked about.
It could be to, like, raise money to purchase a large number of some specific kind of healing spells to pass out.
Are there in-game children in World of Warcraft?
I don't know.
Who do I see now? You don't play World of Warcraft.
I don't.
But I thought you knew people, like a lot of people who did.
No, I really don't.
See, here's that. Okay, here. Okay, can I just say, here's a weird thing. I don't know anybody. I mean, that's not true. I mean, I'm sure that I know people. Like, if I could somehow just like wave. If I could wave my wand, and then somehow all the people I knew who played World of Warcraft were suddenly known, you know, illuminated, I go, oh, okay, well, of course I do. Like, I'm certain that 20% of my acquaintances probably do. But offhand, I can't name anyone who is a known World of Warcraft player in my circle of friends. The
no,
only
Kristen
person.
Bowie used to play
she
it,
quit,
but,
though,
but
that's
she quit.
The thing.
Yeah.
I, she was the, that's exactly who I went to. And it's like, for reasons that she's never really explained, she quit playing World of Warcraft.
Yeah,
I don't know why that was.
She didn't like it anymore.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, you know. Yeah. So I don't know if they're like if they're small fry in World of Warcraft, but that
I don't know.
Okay, I'm gonna make a note because that's something that we should do. That would be hilarious.
Okay.
Just because I like stuff that doesn't make any sense, you know, I like things that are just absurd. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Cheney Watch.
I'm sorry. Here's your Cheney Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson. Plus, nothing rhymes with Azeroth, so it's a little bit of a challenge. For Thursday on the Rick Emerson program, here's your Cheney Watch. Visigoth. Closet Moth. The Great God Thoth. Here's your Cheney Watch, Don Taylor.
President George W. Bush considered dropping Vice President Dick Cheney from his 2004 presidential campaign to, quote, demonstrate I was in charge. Unquote, the former president says in his new memoir. Ironically and predictably, it was in fact Mr. Cheney's idea. The vice president offered to drop out of the race in mid-2003. I did consider the offer, Bush writes in Decision Points, which I'm sure he wrote all by himself with no help from anyone, to be published next week. He says he spent several weeks exploring the possibility of replacing Cheney with Senator Bill Frist, then the Senate Majority Leader. While Dick helped with important parts of our base, he had become a lightning rod for criticism from the media and the left, Bush writes, all by himself, without
yes,
any help from anyone, because that's how he talks.
It was Dick Cheney that everybody found fault with.
He was seen as dark and heartless, the Darth Vader of the administration. He also discloses that the lowest moment of his presidency came in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, when Kanye West, the rapper, said, George Bush doesn't care about black people. Mr. Bush writes that he was disgusted by the accusation, later telling his wife it was the lowest point of his 8 years in charge. Lower than choking on a pretzel?
Well, and I would say, really, it seems like the lowest point of your administration actually ought to be, you know, all of the boondoggling that happened after the hurricane itself. Yeah. Maybe not the fact that someone criticized said boondoggling.
Or maybe like the giant war you got us into so that Dick Cheney could make billions of dollars
now
working for Halliburton.
Now you're nitpicking, Don. Can I just tell you that I had forgotten sort of all
You've
about...
fallen off a segue?
I'd forgotten all about that moment until the other day when I was putting together that top five songs about a politician, because there is a song by, and I forget the name of the act, but there's like some hip-hop collective. They did a song that is just called George Bush doesn't care about black people. And the hook is like part of the sample, the Kanye West thing. And then there's verses and whatever. But I remember sitting I think I was in a hotel room for some reason. I think Laura and I were like, we were on vacation or we were out of town or something. I remember just sitting there and watching that hurricane special. And if you remember, do you remember who Kanye West was standing with?
Yeah, Mike Myers.
Mike Myers.
And Mike Myers looked really startled and uncomfortable.
Like, no, oh my God. You know, and just like, I ought to have had like some like a blood pressure cuff on him at that moment.
It's just that look on his face like, oh crap.
But I just, you know, it was that moment like, oh, he's off the prompter. He's off the prompter. Because I think Kanye was just supposed to say like, call now or something. He just goes to that, George Bush doesn't care about black people. And I remember Laura and I, we just didn't speak for a second. It was like all the air had been taken out of the room. And I think Laura just went, wow. You know, because it's not like it's the most damning thing you could say.
No.
But I think if you had asked us to list like the 10,000 things we expected to be uttered next on national television, that would not have made the list. It was just so totally and utterly out of the blue and kind of awesome.
Yeah. Well, Kanye West, actually, in a completely separate item that I had sitting here on the table, he told a radio station that he actually felt some sympathy for George W. Bush. After he had his issue with Taylor Swift, when people accused Kanye West of being racist because
right.
they thought that was why he had busted in weirdly on Taylor Swift's, acceptance speech. He says, the same thing happened to me. I got accused of being a racist. With both situations, it was basically a lack of compassion that America saw. With him, it was a lack of compassion with him not rushing, him not taking the time to rush down to New Orleans. With me, it was a lack of compassion of cutting someone off in their moment. But nonetheless, I think we're all quick to pull a race card in America, and now I'm more open due to the poetic justice I feel I have went through, the same thing that he went.
I love Kanye West. Ironically, it's not zanily. I just love that guy. He makes me happy every single time he's in the news. Doesn't matter what he does, it makes me smile and it makes my day a little bit better. Hey, is it true? And I know I'm like a couple weeks late to the party on this. Did Kanye West get his teeth replaced with diamonds? I know that sounds absurd even to say out loud, but it's like one of those things where. Here's the thing.
No, it doesn't. Sound absurd at all.
See, and that's the whole. Well, let me just close the Cheney watch here, and then I'm going to ask you about Kanye West's teeth.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear?
I was always a little bit surprised that Intercom let me use this watch.
Baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby.
All right. Okay, here's the thing about Kanye West. The genius of Kanye West. Is that, and you can tell this anytime you go to any message board, because message boards are, let's be honest, message boards are where like the lowest like 2% of the human, gene pool is found. I mean, that's like the bottom ladder, rung for the most part. I mean, it's just, you and I both know this. And I'm not talking about a message board like, and I'm not talking about like on Ain't It Cool or on like, on like a fan,
yes.
No, in a different way though. You go to a message board on like some sort of a pop culture site. And yeah, there's like a lot of guys calling themselves like, my name is Danny Glover's Hemorrhoids, and he's posting something. I mean, that's one kind of idiocy, but it's a sort of great kind of idiocy. I'm talking about like on message, like on news sites.
Yeah.
Like when you go to where there's like a news story being reported, because the first 70 comments are just people like, either blaming who's in office or blaming the opposition party in like an increasingly moronic tone of voice and with like an increasingly huge disregard for like rules of the English language. I had a point. Wait. Kanye, wait.
Teeth?
Yeah, I don't know how I was getting to the teeth thing, though.
I don't know. But the answer is yes.
So I'll go to message boards every time Kanye West does something absurd or insane or hilarious. And it's like the great thing about Kanye West is the same thing that was great about like – about the Sex Pistols, or about Muhammad Ali, about Gene Simmons, about Kiss, about Alice Cooper, about any of those guys. It's just the incredible ease with which you can rile up a tight-assed, usually white and lame section of the population by doing something that is so evidently meant to just rile people up and get publicity. I mean, that's the great thing about Kanye West is that everybody is just blind to the fact that he's just working you like a puppet under the table, friend. But then he started this like Twitter feed about 6 weeks ago. And it's like the Twitter feed. The thing about Kanye West that makes him a genius is that he simultaneously is the thing and parodies the thing. So, like he sent out this angry Twitter message, I don't know, like maybe 5-6 weeks ago. It was like all caps with like a million exclamation marks, angry that like some vase he had ordered showed up but did not have cherubim on the side of it. And it was always like, how hard is it to get me the correct vase that has cherubim on the side? Come on! And it was like, who complains about that? Who complains that the like $5 million vase that he has purchased doesn't have cherubim holding harps on the side? You know, and that like, and that he'd asked for like, he'd asked for like beige threading through like some pillow, but instead it was taupe. And he said, this is unacceptable. You know, like, the rest of it was just exclamation marks. And it's like, that is so great because it's exactly what everybody thinks he is, and yet it's also making fun of what everybody thinks he is. So when I saw the story that it's like Kanye West got his teeth replaced by diamonds, I thought, there's like an equal chance that it's true and not true. So do we have some sort of clarification as to whether that diamonding did happen?
It is indeed true. He posted a picture of his mouth on Twitter and wrote, my teeth are real diamonds. These are not fronts. I replaced my bottom row of teeth with diamonds.
So it's not like a grill or like caps or something. He had his teeth removed and had diamonds mounted into his jaw?
I guess. I don't know. He went on the Ellen DeGeneres show, and he showed them, and he told her, when she asked, dear God, why, he said, I just thought the diamonds were cooler.
Here's a question for you. I have a science question, Dawn. Are diamonds harder than the enamel in your teeth?
Yeah.
They're the hardest substance on earth, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you could eat with them.
Yeah.
Okay, now I guess there's something else besides the fact you're not going to get cavities in your diamonds.
No.
Is there any, let me ask you this, apart from the fact that you'd have a mouthful of diamonds, is there any benefit to having real teeth as opposed to having diamonds?
I don't think so.
They're sharp, they're hard, they can grind things up, they're shiny.
Yeah.
They're easier to keep clean and polished looking, I would imagine.
Yeah. And he did just get his bottom ones done, so his upper teeth, and he does have really beautiful, perfect veneers on top, so his upper teeth still look like just absolute perfect, gorgeous white teeth. He just got his bottom teeth.
Let me ask you this. Do you have a photograph of him with the diamond teeth?
Because
I'm wondering how his teeth go together when he closes his mouth then.
You kind of see it a little bit. I think this is the clip from Ellen DeGeneres, and you can see it a little bit.
I wonder if the diamonds are pointed on the bottom, because it's like, how would they mesh with his upper teeth? Also, let me ask you this.
They'd have to be square so you could bite and chew.
See, because that's the thing. If diamonds are harder than enamel, over time, are the diamonds on the bottom of his mouth actually going to wear his teeth away up top?
Yes.
We have to get a dentist on to answer some of these questions. Also, how are the diamonds fastened into his jaw? I'm not saying, look, maybe this is, see, again.
Well, luckily, I know someone who works in the dental industry.
Oh, my God. So you do.
Because,
yes. Because here's the thing. And I know that I'm just officially gushing about Kanye West. It's like we're going to the prom or something together. But the genius, again, of that guy is that, honestly, if I had to lay like Vegas money right now, I don't know whether the whole thing is just going to be some sort of a gag at the end or not. Whether he's going to go, of course I did. What are you, insane? And he pulls them out. And what are you, nuts?
No,
diamonds?
I think he really did it.
How do they fasten them to his jaw, do you think? You can't like just screw those in.
Sure you can. If they're implants, they...
You can't put a screw into a diamond. It's the hardest substance on earth. The only thing that you could screw into a diamond is a diamond screw.
But they could, I don't know, the diamonds could be set into some kind of a base that is therefore implanted, like an implant.
So it's like the base of a ring, and then that is then like mounted on his... But then where does it even go? Does it hook into his actual jawbone?
Yeah, that's what they do with implants. You actually implant them, you know, they actually get cemented and screwed. You know, you get the metal post and you get the cement, and it goes directly into your jaw.
I wonder if these are like industrial diamonds, like the kind they use for record needles and like, hole punching material or something. Yes?
I bet he paid full retail for whatever these diamonds are, because, you know, that, first of all, then they have to also be cut to a specific size. So
they have to shape the diamonds to fit the inside of his mouth.
I mean, they could be, I suppose, like, you know, marquee cut, which are sort of square and kind of tooth-like. But then they would have to be set in something that would therefore like probably have a metal post that would then be cemented into the jaw.
I wonder if they gave him, if he pondered occasionally, like if he was wondering, do I want to go all diamonds or like get a single ruby or a single emerald or maybe just a sapphire or something put in there? Yes, and to enter the text box, this is Rick Emerson pondering the application of ice grills. Yes, this is playing to my strength. Oh, by the way, okay, here we go. I play World of Warcraft. I am
I'm a 50-level undead mage, he says.
Of course you are, sir.
Sir, I will ask you later on about whether there are children in World of Warcraft and whether or not we can write a song to benefit them. Or if not children, for whom would we raise money? Again, like maybe to combat a plague or if there's like a pox that's on the land. That we can get that taken care of. Final thing about Kanye West, the teeth, the blah blah blah, the whatever. But it's like that. When I saw that news story, it's like Kanye West has lower teeth replaced with diamonds. I looked at it and I thought, okay, is he just punking like all of the news media, or is this a thing he would really do? And I realized that in my head, I was absolutely 50-50 split about whether that was plausible that he would do it in real life. And that's when I realized how he had just achieved this perfect zen-like state of being the thing and being the parody of the thing simultaneously, which is hard to do.
I think it's also a sign of just how white you are that it would even occur to you that a rapper might not have his lower teeth all replaced with diamonds.
See,
considering the things that many of these artists have actually spent money on.
That's true. That's true. Although, you know, the thing about Kanye West is that he really defies most of the rap stereotypes when you think about it. I mean, he's a guy, like, you see him half the time, and he's wearing pink and coral golf shirts. And it's like all of his albums, he has like the College Dropout and Graduate, College Dropout and was it Graduation after that, or, you know, Finishing School or Cotillion or something. But I mean, and his like all of his, his cover art is all like really based in this weird kind of anime that has like big teddy bears on the front of it. He really eschews the macho stereotype or posturing that is prevalent in. You know, like, nobody's ever going to confuse him with 50 Cent. I mean, this is not ever going to – which is why Jay-Z for the longest time, because Kanye made his name as a producer, and Jay-Z, he kept saying, like, well, I'm going to put out my own record. And Jay-Z kept saying, like, no, like, you don't – trust me, you're going to get killed. Like, if you put out a record, you will be ridiculed, you'll be mocked, everybody will deride you. You will never be taken seriously because he's from a well-to-do family. He looks like a guy who just came out of a prep school. He dresses like a preppy. He has doesn't have any of the iconography or imagery that's associated with hip hop. He does the weirdest sampling of like Daft Punk records and stuff. But then he does something like this, and so it just makes your head kind of weird a little bit. Final thought about Kanye West: I don't think I have it here. I was going to have the Howard Dean scream. But not unlike the Howard Dean scream, I never, ever, ever, ever get tired of that gag of I'm going to let you finish, but first I got to say. And then, the da-da-da-da is the greatest of all time. Like when it's quoted by somebody in a message board or in conversation or whatever. Or if like I'm at the subway just ordering a sandwich and a guy behind me goes, I'm going to let you finish, but first of all, I got to say the half-inch turkey sub is the greatest sandwich of all time. All time. It's still funny.
Wow.
It's never going to not be funny.
Conversely, I was tired of that about 5 minutes after I heard it
first
time. Yeah, it doesn't really do
it. I'm all over that. I love me some that. All right.
So before we move on to like the top five and that sort of thing, I've decided, okay, I'm ready to hear your coworker did with the...
With the meat sticks.
With the Alberta.
All right. I won't name him, but this is a friend of mine who worked at a... what the hell was it called? It wasn't a Plaid Pantries in Washington. It was like a gas and sip, basically. And so he, like everybody, and you've talked about this, how working in retail, even though retail customers are just drawn from the larger population base and everybody's a customer of something, I don't think it's the customers as such. I think people are generally loathsome, but it's not like you're just effing with them all the time as you're walking around in your daily life. It is the combination of dealing with people, but then also doing it from a retail or customer service vantage point that fills you with hate. It's like two sort of inert elements that when mixed together, you're just like, oh, F these people. I just hate all of these bastards.
Plus the fact that, yes, people are generally loathsome in general, but when someone is in a situation where someone is waiting on them, they in many people, this just brings out the worst in them.
Oh, in
which
me.
Which is why we were talking about this before. When people say, I hate customers, that's what they mean. They don't mean I hate humanity in general. They mean I hate people who act like douches when someone is waiting on them.
Now, that's true. So customers are a shorthand for like obnoxious customer.
But it's that specific situation that they're in too. It's like, you are subservient to me at this moment, so I'm going to act even worse to you than I would in any other situation I might encounter you
in our lives.
And also, I think that when you're working in a customer service position or in retail, just like tiny behaviors just have a completely disproportionate capacity for angering you.
Yes.
Where you're just something that something would, they would do and it wouldn't bother you most of the time. If you're sitting there and you're working, you're jockeying a cash register for $6 an hour, you know, and a guy's going, well, you're out of eggs. Well, when are they going to be back in? You just want to go like, die. You just want to put a pen right through their eye and set fire to their hair. Because I worked at a convenience store and I had all of that hatred where people would like complain that like their particular brand of malt liquor was not in stock. And I would just be like, you know, why don't you get effed right now, friend? Here's the thing that would anger me. When I worked at a 7-Eleven, it was in San Diego, which is, you know, that's a warm place, El Nino or not. And so I would work there and it would get below 75 degrees. And you would just get these weak-ass Californians that would come in looking for Duraflame logs. And it's like this guy goes, where are your Duraflame logs? And I said, I don't know, they're like an aisle 5 by the lighter fluid. If I can ask, sir, what is it? What do you need the shorting? He goes, well, because it's cold. And it's like, that shouldn't have made me angry, but it's like I had to fight off for a few seconds the urge to go bludgeon him to death with that Duraflame log. Like for no reason. And which is why I'm glad I left that gig, because it manifested itself in things like I would do this. I would... like I would take, you know, they have the French roast and the regular coffee and the extra coffee, the extreme bean, and then the decaf. And I would just make like a triple strength extreme bean and I would just put it into the decaf canister. You know, I probably killed guys with that. I mean, it's probably somebody with heart palpitations came in and their head exploded later that day. My fault, you know, no reason for it. I just did. So earlier we were talking about the Oboyo Berto Sausage Factory and those meat sticks they sell by the bin, by the cash register. And my friend, who I guess I will not name, just... And I asked him why he did this, and he said, I don't know, just kind of bored. But it is, as you said, it's the combination of, it's not even fear and loathing, it's like apathy and boredom and loathing. I'm giving you like a 10-second warning here. He said that at slack moments during the overnight shift, he would just take one of those Oboyo Berto meat sticks out of the little bin by the cash register and quote, final warning. Turn in like 5 seconds. He'd say, quote, I just file that through my ass crack like a credit card. End quote. It's the like a credit card that sells that right there. Not actually jamming it into anything, really. Not as such. Filing it through like a credit card. Because then you get the idea, because then you picture it whether you want to or not, like the guy at Safeway going, swipe your card right through the slot.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, think about that.
Yeah.
All right.
I am.
Think about it.
I can't help it now.
You think about it a long time, Dante.
And I'm going to be thinking about it every single time I see one of those containers of beef sticks.
Yeah. So you just think about that Otter Pop that Patrick bought. It was in plastic. Not that I couldn't defile that, but it'd be hard work.
See, I don't buy food that has been displayed in public in an openable container. I just don't.
What else? Well, you know, there's those sausages that they keep at the front counter as well. It's like bar food is the same way, because a guy is going to take a whiz and come back and rummage around in the peanut bowl.
And then there's like, you know, you got 7-Eleven. Some of them have like a donut thing.
Oh, yeah, with the... You open it up.
I am not buying a donut from 7-Eleven that has been just available for anyone to paw at the 7-Eleven.
I hadn't really thought about it. And let me just tell you, again, as a guy, I did work the overnight shift at a 7-Eleven, which in some ways was a glorious job to have, because I just didn't care. It was so great to have a job I didn't care about at all. But you wonder why I was such a fat bastard when I moved here. It's A, because I was going to the dollar store and buying those weird applesauce Pop-Tarts for like $1 for 100 of them. And then also at 7-Eleven, they do the McDonald's thing where at the end of the day, certain things that haven't sold, they just get thrown out. But it's like an open secret that they don't get thrown out. They get put in the trunk of my car. And so I would take A, all the donuts home. Look at all these fritters that didn't sell. And then, you know what else the guys at 7-Eleven take home? All of the little pre-wrapped, pre-made sandwiches. Those all went home with me. So I just was spongy like nobody's business by the end.
When I was 20, I had a boyfriend who worked at a fried chicken joint. And we ate a lot of fried chicken like 10 o'clock at night after he got off work.
God damn. And it's like, which is great, but then you get to the point where you can't look a bucket of chicken in the eye ever again. You just look and you go, oh, I can't. I just can't. That, and I lived down the street from a McDonald's where they would occasionally, like at the end of the shift, they would just sell you, and I was unemployed. And I had a wife, you know, even then, or I guess, I don't think we were married, but Lara's, you know, we were together. But it's that unemployed self-loathing thing where you're like, I don't deserve nice food. I'll just eat out of a dumpster because I felt such male guilt about not having a gig. But there was this McDonald's where the guy at the end of the shift for like $2 would just sell you like everything that was left in one bag. You know, he'd be like, I got 75 Big Macs left. I go, I'll give you $2. Sold. And they go into a bag. And then that was what I would eat for the rest of the week.
There's a bakery of some sort up 11th Street, a few blocks from here.
Yes, the little T. No, you're not talking about to. Oh, on 11th.
Alessio, I think it's called, something like that. Anyway, I drive by it every single day, and I think it was sometime the end of last week or early this week. That the dumpster in their parking lot was full, like to overflowing, with plastic bags full of bread.
Really?
And I had this thing. I almost like turned the car around and went back. And just grabbed bread. And I thought, well, what do I need with, like...
dumpster bread.
Many, many bags of dumpster bread. And I just thought to myself, I hope somebody who works for, like, a homeless shelter or something sees this or is alerted to it and comes by and picks up all this bread. Because literally, it looked like there were probably about, like 40 pounds of rolls in plastic bags.
What they do sometimes, though, is they actually then will put bleach on that stuff because so you pick it up and you know right away, like, oh, I can't eat this, because I guess there's some liability issue where they don't want somebody eating their dumpster bread and then getting trichinosis or, you know, whatever the hell. But they probably don't. But I think that was actually just in California where they were required to make dumpster food inedible or whatever. So that was probably good. But here's the thing. Then you have the long, dark shadow of the soul moment where you have to admit to yourself you're eating dumpster food.
Yeah.
Eating food out of a dumpster. Have you ever taken anything out of a dumpster like that and eaten it?
Not, this sounds weird. Not since I was a kid, but I mean, my father went through a period. My father was kind of crazy, and my dad went through a period where he discovered the joys of dumpster diving. We were moving, and he went behind a grocery store to get some cardboard boxes for moving, and like looked in the dumpster and realized how much, like, whole edible, often still like packaged food was in the dumpsters behind grocery stores. And so we went through this period of probably about a half a year where my dad would go, come on, and take me to the grocery store and hoist me up into the dumpster. And I would pull out, like, you know, bananas that were just kind of bruised and things. And I don't know. And then he got tired of that, and we didn't do it anymore.
Can I tell you one of the worst moments of my life? Is just one of the I've never told anybody this. This is one of the. I guess it's relatively bad, but it's a moment where you. Do you have those moments where you just stop and you ask yourself, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, how did I get here? It's like Paul Thomas Anderson talked about that sequence in Boogie Nights where Dirk Diggler's at the house on the hills and the gunfire and the fireworks. And he said he was trying to capture that moment where you find yourself at a party at 3 a.m. and it's a party where lots of bad things are happening. And you say, like, how did I get here? What have I done in my life that I'm here at this moment? I had a moment like that. This is the only thing this has in common is I guess you'll get it at the end. This is, I don't know, back 1990, like 15 years ago, I guess, because it was when I was living in Utah. But anyway, so I was living in Utah, and I was, it was more than once, but it wasn't a lot. But it was like there was this, occasionally sharing the company of a young lady who was an exotic dancer. And so it was just, but it was like one of those weird things where it's like, I don't think we ever saw each other in the daylight. It was like one of those after 2 a.m. only, really, because they work kind of late. And also just because, like, what am I really going to do with some stripper? Like, go to the library and just, you know, let's look up, let's read, you know, let's study Goethe. You know, it's just, you know, that's not going to happen. But I remember and it was also one of those things where it's like, and you may have had relationships like this, Don, because you have some traits which I think people would view as being traditionally male. But it's one of those relationships where, like, the entire time you were in the relationship from beginning to end, like, you only really ever saw about 4 square feet of their house.
Yeah.
And it was like the 4 square feet that it took you from walking at the front door to, like, get to the bedroom or whatever. And it's like you knew they probably had a rest of the house, but except for, like, maybe the bathroom, like, you never saw it.
Yeah.
And it was always dimly lit, and it was sort of a shadowy, like, out there, you know, kind of a wasteland sort of a thing. Anyway, but I just remember, like, I remember I was just at this girl's house one time, and it was, you know, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and it was, you know, whatever. All of the primary reasons for being at her house had already happened. But it was that thing where, like, you know, you got to wait more than 10 seconds before going, well, got to go, because, you know, you want to be that guy. So we're just, you know, I'm making the small talk or whatever, and it really is the smallest of small talk, too, with somebody with whom you have, like, zero things in common. And I'm kind of sitting there and going, so, it was like Saturday night. I'm like, so what's, What are you going to do? What are you going to do tomorrow? What's your Sunday going to be like? What are you doing? And she just says, and it was like there were so many things contained, so many revelations contained in this one sentence that it's like my brain couldn't even conceive them all. She just said, well, my son and I are going to go dumpster diving probably first thing. And I just said, okay. Didn't know she had a son. Didn't know that he was, if I had known she had a son, I didn't know he was around. I'd never seen any evidence of him. I don't know where he was kept when I was there, if he was just like in a crate like the Gimp or something. And I didn't really know that, that was how she whiled away her Sundays, was her and her son just off dumpster diving. And she just said it, and then she just smiled like the brightest smile at me. She just said, my son and I, we're going to go doing some dumpster diving. And just grinned. And in the back of my head, it was like a little, like one of those little, like, Frankenstein electrical, those, like, knife switches just closed. Went from on to off. And I said, that's really great. I got to go. I left this thing outside. I have to go. Goodbye now. I got to leave. And that was it. It's one of those things, because immediately you just conjure up all kinds of, just things that you don't want to conjure in your head. I have no way, none, zero, with the possible exception of the switch thing there to tie this into Squire's Electric.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to go with the switch.
All right. Squire's, I'll just go bare bones this time around. We're going to call this a no-frills, straight-ahead read. SquiresElectric.com is how you can find out more about, yes, Squire's Electric. SquiresElectric.com, they are fully licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. And when I say protect you from yourself, I'm not necessarily saying that you don't know what you're doing or that you're going to somehow make a mess of it. But, you know, it's like going through, if you've ever had to, like, fix, like, anything around the house that requires any kind of handyman type ability, whether it's just like a little plunger ball cock thing in the toilet or the tank or whatever that stops it from running, or you just like replacing part of a drain or like that U-joint or something under the sink. The thing about it is it's like you will go from zero to like unbelievably hair-tearingly, teeth-gnashingly, garment-rendingly frustrated in like 5 seconds. So if everything goes well, then everything goes well. If everything goes poorly or if just something goes poorly, it's like you immediately get in the worst mood of your life. And that is no state of mind to be in which you are having to deal with electricity. I mean, that is not the frame of mind you want to be operating in as you're looking at these two cables and going, I guess I wrap one of these with something so that it doesn't do something else, and then one of them is positive. Well, I guess I'll just... And the thing is, with electricity, it's not like the toilet where you can just flush the handle over and over again with your hand inside, holding the little lever and trying to figure out if it's actually going to work.
Oh, you can do that.
You can, but
you
you're only going to...
You shouldn't do that.
Here's what you won't be able to do. You won't be able to do it over and over. You'll be able to do that once, probably, because it's either going to work or not, and if not, it'll be your next of kin taking a whack at that. So you contact Squire's Electric and, just have them come out and do it, and they'll give you a free estimate so you know up front how much it's going to cost. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. That is how you contact that fine group of folks. SquiresElectric.com, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio program. Coming up in around 3:15 Pacific time for those of you who are listening to us live. Again, to recap something I said earlier, if you are one of those folks who've been emailing me about stuff in the archive, don't forget the archive's recently been updated. I think our Tony Bennett interview is in there now. The Nikki Six interview, I believe, is in there. The Clerks 2 interview in there. Don Rickles, also the Clown Watch theme. The Dave Mustaine interview. Terry Pratchett. All of those things are in there now.
It's an embarrassment of riches.
It really is. It's a cornucopia of audio delights. So we'll do that top five tomorrow, I guess. So it's the top five songs about fall?
Yes.
Excellent. So that top five songs about fall, that is happening tomorrow right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Also, somebody emailed me earlier, said, I have a brother who used to live in Portland. Now he lives in Des Moines for reasons that I guess made sense to him at the time. Can I get a gift certificate if he doesn't live in, I guess, gift subscription is what he means if he doesn't live here. Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you got an email address for whoever it is, if you go to rickemerson.com, right underneath the Listen Now and Listen Now and Subscribe labels, there are, there's a couple links there. One of them is for the archives, and one says Give a Gift Subscription. As long as you know the email address of the other person, That is all you need and all we need to give them a gift subscription to this program. You can do that either monthly or yearly, whatever level of subscription you want to give them. So that's how you do it. You go to rickemerson.com to find out more. Well, let's do one more here, and then we'll wrap all this up. Don Taylor, what is the story you want to use to send people on their way?
Oh, wow.
Into the bosom of the afternoon.
I know there's got to be something. I have nothing.
Okay.
I got nothing.
We'll just end the show now.
There's really, after the whole afternoon of snack food and Kanye West and
strippers and dumpsters
and Alberta sausage swiping.
Yeah.
You know, there. What could we possibly end with, really?
You're right. There's really no other way that we can end this this program. We just have to draw to a close now. All right. The Rick Emerson Radio Program will encore here in just a short while. Don't forget, this program ends every day, followed by a brief musical interlude. You will then hear an encore of today's Legion of News episode, then an encore of this very fine radio program. Be sure to join us tomorrow when our guests will, I believe, include Mr. Big Jim Willig, who's going to be in the studio with us. Also, Don Taylor's Top 5, the top 5 songs about autumn. In the meantime, in between time, we thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, from where all good things come. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Thursday, November 4th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for safe. Thank you for listening. Be safe, and we'll see you all again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News, and shortly after 1 o'clock for this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.